Bruce Blood with your host, Peter Schiff.
It's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street on the Spot, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street on the Spot with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter. Welcome again to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun. We are broadcasting, as we do, live every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We simulcast on the Internet on my website at www.europac.net and on shortwave 5.070 megahertz. And again, this is a call-in show. I want to give out the phone number and try to encourage as many people to call as possible early in the show. That way people don't bunch up towards the end of the hour. The number is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Well, a lot has happened in the last week. Certainly, we've had the continued carnage in the precious metals and the energy sectors. We had oil trading below $60 a barrel today for the first time briefly. You know, we were almost at 80 about a month ago. We hit $78, so over a 20% correction very quickly. Gold and silver prices continue to be under pressure on the defensive. The gold stocks continue to make new lows. They tried to rally a little bit this morning, but nothing doing, and they got beaten back down again. A lot of money, obviously a lot of speculative money moving out of the market. Also, we found out yesterday that a major hedge fund basically blew up, a $10 billion hedge fund that had some substantial positions in the spreads in the oil and gas, or natural gas, blew up and lost $5 billion probably in the last several weeks. And I think the existence of these positions, these highly leveraged, enormous positions, are part of the reason for the drop. Obviously, they didn't start the ball rolling, but, you know, once it happened and it started to move against them, and, you know, people realize that they're in trouble, then obviously the markets are going to move even further as people start to front run the fact that they're going to have to unwind, because these guys are getting margin calls. They don't have the capital. They have to get out of these positions. So I think part of the reason for the exaggeration in these moves has to do with the highly leveraged speculators that are in this market. And the fact that, you know, a major one just got blown out is, I think, a pretty good sign that the bottom is near. You know, these are typically the types of things that happen at turning points or at bottoms. Because remember, these speculators are not the reason that the markets are moving. The markets are moving, and that's attracted the speculators. So they're just there, you know, along for the ride, and they add to the volatility. But it's the fundamentals that are driving this market, not the speculators. But certainly in the short run, the speculators can have an influence on the volatility. I think, you know, we've been seeing that. Now, of course, also we had the Fed came out today and paused again for the second time, left interest rates unchanged, and again tried to bluff that they're being vigilant and looking for any signs of renewed inflation, and they're ready to raise interest rates again if warranted, and we all know that's a bluff. We know the Fed really wants to lower interest rates to try to put some kind of buffer, at least they hope, beneath the housing market, which I don't think it's going to work. But I think the Fed certainly would want to lower rates. They just have to make sure they can do it without destroying the dollar, which I don't know what they can do. But so that also want to talk about, I just got back. I spoke at the Washington State Mortgage Lenders Conference. I just got back from that over the weekend. And if anybody happened to have been there, if they're listening, it'd be good to call. But certainly a lot of good observations to take away from my participation in that event. And also, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about one of my listeners had sent me a link to Jim Poplava's radio show, and he had a guest on there, and I listened to it for a while. And just, you know, talk about the stuff that this guy had to say. I don't know if anybody saw this, listened to this. The guy, I think, lived in Hong Kong. And, you know, he was commenting on, he had written a book. I forget the name of the book. And no point in plugging it because it's obviously not worth reading. But he was trying to, you know, draw the conclusion that people who are worried about the U.S. economy, who are looking at the trade deficit, who are looking at the current account deficit and all that, they've got it wrong. That it's a new era and that these numbers are meaningless. And he had a bunch of ridiculous reasons. And, you know, the guy talks like he's intelligent. So somebody listening to that might actually think that his, you know, rational, you know, his line of logic was, you know, made some sense, which of course it didn't. I mean, everything the guy said was completely ridiculous. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. I don't know if anybody heard this particular interview with Poplava. But if you did, definitely give me a call. I'd like to hear, you know, anybody else's impressions, if they, you know, were able to come to the same conclusions that I did from listening to this guy. He was on for about an hour. And, you know, the whole time he was on, Poplava didn't even really challenge him on anything. I mean, he just let him get away with one outrageous statement after another. I don't know if that's, you know, just how his format is, and I don't listen to the show a lot. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, judging by his positions, I can't imagine he was agreeing with what this guy was saying. But anyway, I sent an email over to Poplava saying, look, you know, I wouldn't mind coming on your show to refute what this guy said. In fact, I would like to have him on at the same time, but either way, I think his comments were just so outrageous that they definitely needed to be refuted. Anyway, let me quickly take a call. I've got one caller hanging on the line. Let me just give out the number again for any of you who are interested in calling. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And let's take the first call from Rutger in Chicago. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. First off, I just want to say it's a really great show, and I really appreciate what you're doing. I really learned a lot just by listening. But my question is, I understand that you're really big on China for the future, and I just see a problem in the short term, and I don't know how you resolve this issue as far as them being so highly invested in dollars with their currency reserves and then just in general holding a lot of dollars. So I don't understand how that, at least in the near term, won't really hurt them with the, you know, with there being a crisis in the future with the dollar.
Well, certainly, look, certainly the fact that they've wasted a lot of their savings on dollars isn't a negative. I mean, the Chinese economy would be far better off if instead of holding dollars, they had gold or they had euros or yen or, they had saved legitimately. So that's going to be a loss. But way against that, you know, all of the incredible infrastructure that they are building, all the factories, all the know-how, the society that they're being built is formidable. And, you know, they will be able to withstand that investment hit, which is basically what it is. It basically amounts to a bad investment that an otherwise prosperous society has made. They would have prospered to a greater extent had they not, you know, been that foolish. But if you look at it in totality, you know, they are the future. That Asia, I mean, you look at where all the production is, where all the capital is, where all the savings is. I mean, sure, they have a lot of dollar savings, but they have a lot of savings that are not dollars. And, they have the factories, they have the infrastructure, I mean, they have all this. And they have, relatively free markets. That's where the future is.
But then, seeing that they are so, just their currency is so highly backed by the dollar, then wouldn't
back that be nothing?
Same situation we have here in the U.S. just as far as the dollar goes and the currency. And,
but the currency is backed by nothing. But ultimately what's going to give the currency value is the products that the Chinese produce and the demand for those products all around the world. Now, at some point, the Chinese Reserve Bank, you know, might be able to build up a reserve of other currencies or gold bullion and legitimately back its yuan with something. But right now, it's not. I mean, it's not backed barely by anything. But sure, the Chinese are being foolish. They're giving a huge subsidy to the American consumer because they buy into the nonsense that their economy is only viable so long as they can sell products to Americans. And once this notion is finally, abandoned, I mean, it's a foolish. I mean, the world has believed in many foolish things over time. There have been, the popular delusions and the madness of crowd. People have thought very foolish things, and this is just another one of those examples. And once they come to their senses, they will no longer subsidize us, and the dollar will collapse. But as I said before, the immediate benefit to the Chinese of the dollar collapsing is enormous, because the flip side of the dollar collapsing means the yuan skyrockets. And even though the Chinese have a lot of dollars, they have more of their own currency. And whatever they lose in purchasing power from the dollar, collapsing, they'll more than gain that in the purchasing power of their own currency rising. Not only for their savings, but their incomes, their wages.
Yeah.
Chinese have nothing to lose and everything to gain when the dollar collapses. Now, in the short run, who knows? Sure, there could be some negative, there's a change, sometimes is always negative, and people are nervous, and they don't understand what it means. It might take a few days, a few weeks, a few months for people to grasp that the change is for the better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where their future is. It's over there.
I'm sorry. You've mentioned before that you see there being a price support for the dollar, the dollar index at about 80.
That's a technical support level. That if you look at a chart and you go back, to the even late 70s, you'll see that that's where the dollar has had support on many occasions. Many bear market moves in the dollar have ended around that 80 level. And I think once we really take it out, once we start trading, 76, 77, we really break through it, I think that will really usher in a new leg down in the dollar. And I can see the dollar index moving down dramatically.
Great.
And, at some point, of course, the administration and the powers that be are going to try to portray that as if it's a good thing and if it's something that they in fact want. Of course, when you're getting run out of town, the idea is to get in the front of the pack and make it look like you're leading the parade. And I think that's what the administration will try to do, and they'll try to convince Americans that somehow the dollar going down is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
That the other countries, are finally having to compete fairly, they've been benefiting from the overvalued currency. But this is what's going to happen, but this is why we've got to get our money out of the dollar.
Definitely.
Is why these recent pullbacks in hedges like gold are such good buying opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Are you a client of ours?
Actually, I'm not right now. I do have that issue with China, but I mean, I think that you...
Well, regardless, we invest in a lot of countries. If you want to stay clear of China, that's fine with me.
There's so many
get out of the dollar. So if you want to concentrate on Europe or you want to concentrate in, someplace else, that's fine. Just get rid of your dollars and get, we've got assets that we like in countries all over the world.
Exactly. Great. Thanks so much, Peter.
Okay. Yeah, the key—it's really not even that important where you, in which country you invest in. The most important thing is to get out of the United States. So if there's any one particular country that we were including, if you don't like that one, fine. There's plenty to choose from. The important thing is not to be in the U.S. Not to be on this ship when it finally sinks. You want to be in a lifeboat, and there are several different lifeboats you can be in, but just make sure you're in one of them. Anyway, the number again to call, the lines are still available, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. So on the pullback here in the gold and in the oil, I know I said it last week, that they're probably good buys, and of course they've all gone lower, and you don't know where the bottom is in this market. I don't know. Maybe we'll do the show next week and they'll be even lower. I don't know. I don't have a short-term crystal ball. If I did, I wouldn't need a job. But I do know that you know, these are good buying opportunities. And, you know, rather than hoping and trying to figure out if we've got a bottom, I just buy these dips. I've been buying these dips for 6 years, and so far it's been the right thing to do. I don't see anything that changes my outlook. In fact, I think the fundamentals for commodities in general, and gold in particular, have never been better. And I'm going to keep my eye, you know, on the ball there, on the prize. And, you know, I think there's tremendous gains to be made in these sectors, particularly in the metals. But, you know, it's not going to be easy, right? It's not going to be a free ride. It's not like gold's going to go straight up and never go down. I mean, that's too easy. And so the markets have got to make it difficult. Everybody, you know, you're going to have your convictions tested. And it's certainly going to make it difficult on the speculators. You know, these are the people that are in trouble right now, right? The people who went out and borrowed a lot of money that are highly leveraged, like this hedge fund that blew up. These are the people that really have to worry about the downside. Your Pacific Capital clients are not leveraged, or if they are leveraged, it's to a very minor degree. And the short-term volatility is not a problem. It's somebody else's problem. Don't make it your problem. Don't react to it. I mean, some people, you know, call up and they want to sell because they see the market going down. You know, you don't have to do that. I mean, just because somebody else is distressed and has to sell out doesn't mean that you voluntarily do that. It's like if you, you know, forgetting about the real estate bubble, because this example wouldn't, you know, in today, assuming this is a normal real estate market, and your neighbor, all of a sudden, you know, there was a divorce, or he got transferred to France, and he had to sell his house right away, and in order to do that, he had to sell it 20% below the market. Does that mean that you get nervous now and put your house for sale 20% below the market because you're afraid because of what happened to your neighbor? No, your neighbor was in a bind. He had to sell. He couldn't wait for a fair price. And that's the same thing. So if somebody has to get rid of their gold at $570 or their oil at $60 on a drop because they had a lot of leverage and they couldn't meet the margin call, all right, no big deal for the rest of us who aren't leveraged, who don't have to sell, because we can wait. We can pick. You see, when you're not on leverage, you pick the time to sell. You pick. You wait for a high price. You're not going to be forced to sell at a low price. You know, nobody can force you to do that if you've got long-term money invested. But these highly leveraged people, they don't have that luxury. Now, why are they making such big bets, such levered bets? Well, because these guys are getting 20% of the profits. These guys are making billions, taking big bets with other people's money. And this is what happens, you know. And, you know, sometimes when you're gambling with other people's money, you lose other people's money. No big deal, right? It's not yours. And so, you know, there's a lot of moral hazards there. But these are opportunities. These are opportunities for the rest of us. You know, we just finished our new special report on energy trusts. We finally have a comprehensive report, special report, just on these Canadian energy trusts. You can download it. It's on the homepage of my website. It's brand new. We just put it up there a couple days ago. You know, download that report, read it, and, you know, some of these stocks, I'd say these stocks in the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks are down 20%. I'm sure 20% declines, 15 to 20% declines in 2 weeks in some of my favorite oil and gas trusts. If you already own these trusts, you know, don't be bummed out that they're down. I mean, it's, you know, they're not going to stay down, I don't think. And the dividends, they're there. If they have to cut them a little bit because the prices have dropped for natural gas and oil, they cut them a little bit. They'll raise them back up when the prices go up. I've got no doubt that these prices are going higher. Good time to buy some more if you don't have a lot of exposure. If you've got already all the exposure that you care to have in this sector, then just ride it out. But for a lot of you who are listening to this program who have never bought any of these trusts, and of course I've been talking about them on this show since oil was in the 30s, right? And the trusts are not nearly as cheap as they were then. But this is probably one of the best buying opportunities I've seen in these things. One of the biggest moves down in the shortest period of time. So download that report, and you know, there's three trusts I talk about there. There's a lot more than three that we're buying, but get started. It's a great opportunity. You know, don't wait for the turnaround. Don't be afraid to catch this knife, because when you're getting these huge dividends, you know, it's not like trying to buy an internet stock. You know, they're good value here. Just buy them. Precious metals, you know, same thing. I talk on this show about the Perth Mint program. I talk about that all the time. I love that program. It's a great way to buy physical gold, silver, and platinum. You know, if you're not buying physical gold, you should be. If you are buying it, buy more. You know, I've talked to Danny Dwyer in California. She says that a lot of people are reluctant to buy right now. That's the wrong attitude. You know, we're buying for the long term. We're not trading futures contracts on leverage. If you've got cash and you'd rather own bullion, then buy the dip. Don't worry if you buy your gold and the price goes down. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And what ultimately what's probably going to happen to people who are waiting for lower prices is even though we might get lower prices, you still won't buy because you'll be waiting for even lower prices. And you know when you will buy? When the price has moved a lot higher. And then you're chasing the market. So if you know you're going to buy anyway, and if you're just waiting to buy a higher price because now you're convinced it's not going down, just buy now. Because you know what? If gold rallies $100 and you get excited about it again, who's to say it can't drop back down $100 or $150? It can. So if you're going to buy gold anyway, just buy it now. I'd rather pay less money than more money because you get more ounces. And who cares if it goes down? It doesn't matter. Because it doesn't affect the quantity of bullion that you own. But anyway, go to our website to learn about the Perth Mint. You know, it's on our own website. There's a special page for the Perth Mint. Or you can go to the special website for the Perth Mint, goldyoucanfold.com. Goldyoucanfold.com. Or call up the California office. The number out there is 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. Get some information on the Perth Mint, or more importantly, buy some gold or silver at the Perth Mint. Let's take a quick break. We'll play a commercial, and then we'll pick up with your phone calls in the next segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. And let me give out the telephone number again. I've got one caller waiting, but the lines are open. 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597, particularly anybody who might have listened to that Jim Poblava a radio show with the guy from Hong Kong with all that nonsense about the new era in the U.S. economy. Anyway, let me go to the phones. I've got Harry from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, hi, Peter. First of all, I'll say I am a client, and I've been a client for more than a year now. I work with Bruce, and he's doing pretty good for me. I guess you answered a lot of my questions prior to me getting on the phone, but how low do you think the price of natural gas will go?
Well, I don't think it's going to really go much below this $5 level. I mean, it's really been washed out. I don't know. I mean, anything could happen with these markets with all these leverage involved and all these hedge funds. And, you know, maybe we'll find out that there's some more bodies, lying out there from this. So I don't know. But, you know, I do think it's a great opportunity because I still think that the fundamental forces that really drove the breakout in natural gas from where it was to $14, $15. I mean, obviously on the margin there were speculators involved there, but there's some underlying fundamental forces behind these moves, and they're going to continue, both in natural gas and oil. Remember, I think we had some people probably getting into the natural gas market, and ahead of the hurricane season. We had some bad hurricane seasons, last two in a row. And you know what? We didn't have one hurricane this year. We still had the mild winter. I mean, so, yeah, I think just the factors lined up and with all the speculators that, we had this pullback. But, that's not going to happen every year, and, the demand is still rising, and I'm expecting the prices to be on the upward trend.
Have you ever heard about this Canadian trust? It's called Oil Sands Trust.
Yeah, Canadian Oil Sands. I mean, there's a couple of them. We've been buying some of these for clients for years and years. They've actually done extremely well. They've had huge price gains. They don't pay much in the way of dividends, but there's, you know, these are very interesting stories. You know, I look at them a little bit more. They're more speculative than the dividend payers because, as I said, you don't get any dividends, but they've returned. They've had some great gains, you know, speculative appreciation.
Well, I really enjoy your internet site. I get just a tremendous amount of information from it. It's really
a lot of information on there too. I keep adding stuff and changing it, so there's always a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I was trying to think of something else I was going to ask you, I'm pretty diversified. I have stuff in China, and I have stuff in zinc. Of course, I have a lot of natural gas and a little bit of oil. I haven't gotten much into gold.
Here's your opportunity. It's a good pullback, you know, either physical gold or, you know, one of the mining stocks. I mean, it's a lot more speculative. See, basically, there are two types of investments that, you know, what I'm advising people on, investing and speculating. And for the investor, it's all these dividend-paying, solid foreign stocks. For the speculator, it's generally mining. I mean, that's where I think the largest gains are likely to come sector. And, of course, it's speculative because, you know, there's no dividends really. You know, in some of the stocks, like you mentioned, zinc, you know, some of these industrial companies actually have very good dividends. You can get, you know, we've been getting in nickel and zinc and lead, we've been getting 6, 7, 8, 9% dividends. But in the precious metals area, you know, if you're just buying, you know, pure gold companies or gold and silver companies, the dividend yields are really paltry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's really, we're betting on the come there. But I'm very confident that, there's going to be tremendous gains there. And if you're willing to assume the risk, then you can, you know, put some money there. And it's the best time to put these bets on is on the pullbacks. And we're certainly having a pullback right now.
What do you think of all
now, physical precious metals, though, is a little different than the mining stocks. I think that's basically liquidity. I think having physical gold, in your possession or at the Perth Mint is very safe. And I regard it as a safer form of savings than having a CD with dollars, you know, money in the bank.
I would keep it in the Perth Mint.
Fees
are very low, and I've been reading. What do you think of the alternative energy market?
Oh yeah, look, we're involved highly. We're involved in some of the coal companies and some of the wind power companies, and we're involved in some of the uranium companies because of their, you know, the play on nuclear power.
How about ethanol?
You know, I don't have any bets in there other than some of the commodities. You know, we have money in these commodity trusts, and obviously ethanol, you know, is also a play on the grains and the corn and sugar and all the stuff that goes into producing it. We don't have any investments in any of the ethanol producers or anything like that. I mean, there could be some good plays there, but I mean, energy. The world is certainly going to be looking for alternative sources of energy. But I do think one of the reasons that, you know, one of the ways the global energy, you know, crisis, if you want to call it crisis, is going to be solved is going to be when the dollar collapses, because that's going to take 300 million Americans out of the picture. You know, right now we're using 50% of the world's gasoline, so that you can imagine the rest of the world, the other 4.5 billion people, are bidding against each other for the half that we don't use. And once the dollar collapses and Americans are too poor to consume all this oil, it's going to free up a lot of oil for everybody else. So that's going to be one of the major solutions to the world's energy shortage, is Americans no longer consuming so much.
What do you think?
What I want to try to make sure is that my clients are among the few Americans who can manage to maintain their consumption.
What do you think about
the way to do that is to get your money out of the dollar now and buy your oil while it's still cheap.
What do you think about this new discovery that they came up with?
The Chevron, that one?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, look, obviously there's going to be discoveries, you know. Hopefully there's going to be more discoveries over time. But, you know, I don't think we're going to discover oil as fast as the new demand is being created for it.
India and China are the biggest users of gas. We're going to be the biggest users of
gas. Sure, especially when their currencies rise. Imagine how much energy the Chinese are going to consume when they can afford it, when it gets cheap for them.
I think our days are numbered with the dollar.
Oh, yeah. And that number is not that big. And so it's very important that that people move out.
What do you think about this putting a hold on interest rates?
Well, I know the Fed has to do that because, you know, they can see that the, you know, they don't want to put too many nails in the coffin, but, I mean, it's too late. You know, the housing bubble is burst, and, you know, we're headed for this recession, and ultimately they're going to have to raise interest rates more. Rates are still too low. Inflation is higher than the current rate of rates of interest. So, you know, the real return on money is negative right now on dollars. So rates are already too low, but they can't raise them because they know how vulnerable the economy is. So they're just waiting. But, you know, this is going to be a real mess.
Well, any month now, this housing market's going to bust.
No, it already has. It just hasn't, you know, the houses, the inventory is building on the market. I mean, it's just going to take a little time for it to really collapse. So, you know, by next year, we could really be in free fall in the housing sector.
Yeah, I think
so goes the housing sector, so goes the economy. I mean,
absolutely.
We're inseparably intertwined.
Yep.
Which I guess I can segue in to my next topic. I'll talk about the mortgage conference that I was at. But anyway, thanks for the call, Harry. Appreciate your business. Glad you liked the site. Tell your friends. Get more people on that website.
Oh, I always do. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, the lines are open, too. I'm still waiting for someone to call who maybe listened to that Pop Lava program. But anyway, the number to call if you want to get on the air is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Oh, before I forget, too, I got to mention that coup d'etat in Thailand, because, you know, we have a few investments in Thailand. We actually featured Thailand in one of my newsletters, I think one of the issues of the Global Investor, and we have a few Thai stocks in our book now as a result, and obviously they're not doing too well. You know, my gut reaction is this pullback, this coup is likely creating a buying opportunity in Thailand. So take a look at those three stocks I mentioned in the newsletter. If you didn't buy any of them, I guess you know, it's a good thing. Not that, you know, but now might be an excellent time to take another look. You know, apparently they haven't even fired one shot, this whole coup. I mean, it shows you how dangerous it is when you're a leader of one of these countries to actually lead the country, because the president, the premier was at the UN. And, you know, while he was there, the coup d'etat took place. But apparently the king of Thailand, used to be Siam there, so it's the king and I, but the king apparently is giving them the blessing. And I read stories about how the public is behind this. In fact, people were even buying Kentucky Fried Chicken for the soldiers. And they were giving them water, you know, while they were, you know, hanging out front. But too bad they weren't buying that Kentucky Fried Chicken in New Zealand over at Pizza Hut, at restaurant brands. They could use it as a business. But, you know, most likely, you know, I think it's going to be shrugged off. I mean, so they're going to get a new prime minister in there, and, you know, they'll have elections in a year. Well, you know, personally, I'd like to see the king, you know, return to power. You know, I'd love to see, you know, there's a lot of countries around the world that still have monarchs hanging around. You know, they're really just figureheads, but I would really like to see a modern monarchy return, because I think in many cases, a monarchy with a constitution, you know, where the powers of the monarch are limited, is very preferable to a democracy. Now, the problem with democracies is that, you know, the politicians want to get elected, and in order to get elected, they have to do a lot of bad things. They have to steal a lot of money from, you know, and dole it out to the electorate. You know, the best definition of an election I've probably ever heard is that an election is an advanced auction on the sale of stolen goods. And so the whole idea is, if you have a monarch who's in power, you don't have to worry about getting reelected. You know, he could do a good job. And doing a good job means leaving the people alone. Don't tax them. Don't regulate them. Just let them be free. And, you know, I always thought if we had a king in America, you know, how much in taxes would the king of America need to have a great time? I mean, how much would he have to take? $1 billion a year? $2 billion a year? I mean, he'd have a pretty good life. I mean, whatever he took, it'd be cheap compared to what we pay to keep Congress and the senators in there and all these ridiculous programs. I mean, it's costing us $1 trillion a year so that 400 representatives and 100 senators can keep their jobs. I mean, I'd be much better off if we just had one king. You know, how much damage, you know, how much money could he possibly take? And, you know, what keeps the Kings honest, too, is because they don't want to be, you know, they don't want a revolution. They don't want, you know, they don't want to have their heads whacked off. They want to, you know, the public needs to, you know, the citizens, their subjects need to be happy and need to like the king. And so we'd all be a lot better off, you know, with a monarchy. And again, provided the monarch is restricted by a constitution and the king just can't, you know, order someone's head chopped off because, you know, he doesn't like the way he looks, as long as you have a check on the monarch and you have a court system, hey, I'm all for it, but it would be interesting. But obviously that's not going to happen in Thailand. The king is just going to, you know, sit back in his a ceremonial role and wait for a new a prime minister. But, I think it's more likely to create an opportunity. And if anybody's worried about some kind of repeat Asian economic crisis like we had in 1997, I don't think there's any chance of that. You know, the situation in the emerging markets is night and day from what it was in 1997. So I wouldn't look for any major meltdown from this. But again, it's surprising that we didn't see a bid in the gold market. And again, it's just, you know, we're in this vicious correction right now, and it seems like no news is good news for gold, but I think that will change. Oh, anyway, I know I got another guy hanging on the line, so let me take that call. Jeff from Ohio. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Peter. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Okay. Just wondering what you think about, are we heading towards an electronic currency? And how that affects investments.
I don't know what you mean by it. You know,
a digital currency, you know.
You mean a complete elimination?
Right. A long
currency?
Right, especially in light of a crisis that, you know, the crisis.
I don't think so. I don't think that we're going to, you know, that we're headed right now to the cashless society. I mean, one of these days we very well might all just be transacting with plastic on every transaction. But ultimately, if the monetary system is going to survive, it's going to be based on something real. So even if we're all using plastic, there's going to be gold bullion behind it somewhere. There's going to be real money.
Oh, I agree, but even right now we're operating on these, you know, paper notes that aren't backed by anything technically.
I know they're not. That's why we're having so much trouble.
Right.
But it's not going to be an improvement to go from paper that's backed by nothing to just digital numbers that are backed by nothing.
Oh, right. I understand. But I'm talking about the transition until everybody realizes the emperor has no clothes. So that's why you're saying go with silver and commodities and gold and that thing.
Yeah, I think it's all going to happen pretty soon. I don't think it's going to be a long, you know, transition.
Right. Well, this leads me to my concern. I agree with a lot of your theories and the whole thing, but say this Perth offshore gold storage.
Mm-hmm.
If we go to this crisis mode and we go to an electronic currency, how are you going to get your funds back when, you know, the government usurps power? I mean, you know, the Federal Reserve's unconstitutional.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, remember, we're doing something in Australia, so your money is on deposit in Australia.
Right. So I guess the only way really to get it back would be to go to Australia.
Well,
if things get
like if you want to physically pick it up, but they'll send it to you. But yeah, obviously, if the U.S. government is confiscating gold, I wouldn't risk them sending it back. I would leave it there,
right.
And I would go get it when I needed it.
Okay.
But at least you know it's safe in a jurisdiction where the U.S. government can't get their hands on it. If it comes to that, if we get so corrupt that our government is confiscating the private property of its citizens, at least you know that, you know, you've got some money out of the country. Of course, now you run the risk of being a criminal because, you know, you're now a lawbreaker.
Right.
But when the government is operating like that, I mean, that's what you have to do, right? All the founding fathers were lawbreakers. They were all criminals.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying with your premise.
You know, the people that were living in Nazi Germany that didn't tell the stormtroopers that there were some Jews hiding in the basement, they were criminals.
Right.
They were doing the right thing, but they were criminals. So, you know, if our government starts confiscating private property, you know, and you decide not to tell them that your gold's in Australia, you know, that you're a criminal, but doesn't mean you're doing the wrong thing.
Right. I saw some clips on that Freedom to Fascism. I don't know if you're familiar with the film.
Yeah, of course I am. Yeah.
And just, you know, thinking about the things that aren't constitutionally correct, like the Federal Reserve Act or, you know, the income tax.
Well, just about nothing the government does is constitutional, but I mean, you know.
So that I was just thinking how that would relate, but I see your point. Thanks for your time. You're most enlightening.
Sure. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
I know we get some more calls coming in. I've got a call coming in from Life over in the Faroe Islands again, up in Denmark. Go ahead, Life.
Hello, Peter, and good evening to you.
Good evening to you. What time is it out there?
Let me see. It's 1:45 in the morning.
Yeah, you're up late, or up early, if the case may be.
No, I'm up late. Anyways, my question is, I've been following silver quite a bit now, and, I don't really understand what's going on, because if you look at the amount of silver in the world, and you look at how much silver is consumed in the world each year, it's around, last year, I believe it was 860 million ounces, and you look at how much is mined and produced, and it's, around 600 million, and, you have a one-third deficit, and then you have the mercantile exchange, where they trade futures on silver. And if you look how much physical, the whole point of a mercantile exchange is that you actually have the choice to get physical delivery. And the amount of short positions actually exceeds 1 billion ounces. And these guys are not even, they're basically holding a tenth of that in real silver.
Is the caller still there? I think I might have lost him. Hello? Yeah, but I know the point you're making. I mean, it's like, why isn't the price going up? And maybe the reason is that there are a lot of shorts out there. And why they're shorting it? Are they politically motivated? And what's going to cost force them to cover? Obviously, the longs ultimately have the right ability, to the extent they can afford to take delivery of their silver. The longs are able to take delivery. They don't have to settle the contract in cash and roll it over. They can pay for the contracts and force delivery. Now, if something like that were to happen, I mean, who knows what the exchange might do? But obviously, the supply and demand makes no sense. Silver should go up. Is it being manipulated? I don't know. Maybe. But I can tell you that it's cheap and you just got to own it. It was dirt cheap for a while when it was $4 or $5 for a few years. But, it's right now just under $11. I still think it's ridiculously cheap. Does that mean it can't go down? No, it could go lower. Sure, anything can happen. But, I'd much rather be long than be short. Anyway, I know we lost the call, so hopefully that answers your question. I got him back. Life, you there? Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Do I have Life from the Faroe Islands?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. I don't know if you heard what I was saying while we had lost you.
No, but I'll listen online later on. The thing, Peter, is there's these guys are selling silver that doesn't even exist. And basically it's come down to paper controlling the physical. And
look,
if you look on the London's metal exchange, what they did to nickel, they let the short sellers get away with it. They defaulted. And they just let them get away with it. I mean, the whole thing is just, it might as well just be a paper exchange. It's not a metals exchange anymore. It's just
a paper exchange. So the physical demand is going to carry the day, and the shorts are going to have to deliver the metal at some point. And
the London's metal exchange let the guys get away with it. I mean, it's just paper now. I mean, the metals, these future exchanges are no better than the U.S. government printing off phony money. I mean,
ultimately,
futures
prices are too low. The physical demand is going to come in and buy up the futures and demand delivery. And they're going to have to force it, or there's going to be huge shortages. Eventually, the governments and the exchanges, they cannot manipulate it forever. They can do it in the short run, but they can't do it forever. And I think the days are numbered. I think, I think they're in a very weak position. And if you're in the silver market, I mean, look, don't get discouraged. Just don't be leveraged over your head. You don't want to get to a situation where you get forced to lose your silver because of the timing and the leverage.
No, I own 100% of it. I don't. Nothing's leveraged.
But don't worry about it. Sit back.
Yeah. Well,
are you also doing business with us at Euro Pacific?
Yeah, I've been opening up an account, and it's been like some technical difficulties because, you know, I'm abroad and all of this. And
yeah, well, we
can talk with
you and look forward to it. And, yeah, you know, try to, you know, buy some more on this dip.
Anyway, yeah, I'm...
false, but know that my voice is being heard halfway around the world.
Yeah. I'm dealing with Brian Holden.
Brian Holden. Oh, yeah, he's over in Phoenix.
Yeah, I call him a poker player, just like Texas Hold'em.
Yeah, Hold'em, yeah, Hold'em. Hold'em. All right, Life, well, thanks for the call. Appreciate your business.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I know I've got at least one more guy on hold, but let me quickly take one more commercial break, and then we'll be back for the last segment and this last call.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. Let's take no more calls for today. I've got one call on the line. We're kind of getting low on time, and I had a couple of topics that I didn't want to get to. But let me take Greg from Los Angeles. Go ahead, Greg.
Oh, hey, thanks, Peter. No, I was just going to comment. I think I did hear the Pulava interview you mentioned the other week. And I forget the name of the fellow. I want to say Jim Welsh, maybe. It may have been the person. Yeah, I agree. I think his comments from the interview were simply that despite all the really adverse news coming out related to the housing market and the general overall segment of how bad things look, he was just taking the opposite view, saying despite all that, it's possible that, you know, it's not really going to be as bad as everybody thinks it's going to be.
This guy was basically talking about the fact that the people who were worried about the trade deficit and the current account deficit have it wrong, that it's not a problem, that it's no big deal, that, you know, that we have a new service sector economy that actually is viable, and we're going to run these trade deficits forever, and it's never going to be a problem, and it's a bunch of nonsense. You know, and he said so many ridiculous things, one after another, you know, that it was, I can't even remember them all, but I mean, he sounded like an intelligent guy. And so you listen to an obviously intelligent guy talk, and some people might actually think that he's saying something that makes sense, but actually everything he said was absolutely ridiculous. But one of the things that I remember in particular about what he said was he tried to describe the transactions. And he said, for he used Dell Computer as an example, and said, say, I don't remember the exact example, but something like this. Say Dell Computer buys a computer part, or let's say a laptop or whatever, from a Chinese manufacturer, and pays that Chinese manufacturer $300 for this piece of this computer, and then turns around and sells it for $500. And of that $500, $100 ends up being profit to Dell. And let's say the Chinese company that sold the computer for $300, their margins are so small that they only made $10 on the $300. And he was saying, well, China made $10 in profit, and America made $100 in profit. Therefore, based on the profits from the transactions, we're way ahead. And he said that looking at the net deficit, meaning we had to run a $300 trade deficit. He said, well, that's ridiculous. Don't look at that. Look at the fact that we paid $10 to make $100 or something like that. I mean, it was all a bunch of nonsense. And it sounded like it made sense based on the articulate way that he said it. But, of course, the two stupid parts of his whole ridiculous observation are it doesn't matter that the Chinese company only made a $10 profit. Who cares what that company's profit was? What about all the other profits? I mean, that company, that manufacturer,
had to pay wages to its workers. It had to pay rent to the landlord. So that's Chinese workers earning wages. That's a Chinese landlord earning rent. It certainly had to pay for all the parts that went into the manufacturing. There's all the profits of all the other people in the production chain all throughout China. What about all the raw materials that they needed? They had to buy those, and that translated into profits for a mining company in Australia, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of profits that are in that $300, not just the final $10 that was made by the computer manufacturer. So you can't ignore all that. You just can't look at this one profit transaction and try to conclude. But even if you do that, it doesn't matter because the net effect is we ran a deficit to acquire it. And that deficit means we went into debt. And we have to service it. We have to pay interest. I mean, obviously, the profits aren't enough to pay the interest on this enormous debt. I mean, you had this relatively intelligent guy trying to say that an $800 billion a year trade deficit is not a problem. And basically the reason that he thinks it's not a problem is because people have been saying it's been a problem for a few years. And his conclusion is, well, it must be wrong. And that the people who have thought that this is wrong should reassess their conclusions because they must be wrong because we've been having these deficits for years and there hasn't been a crisis. And basically what he should be saying is, you know, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that the crisis hasn't happened yet. It doesn't mean that we have to reassess our conclusions just because it's gone on. I mean, you can say, look, somebody could smoke cigarettes for 30 years and not get lung cancer, and you can come to the false conclusion that cigarette smoking doesn't contribute to lung cancer because somebody was able to do it for a long time without getting cancer. You know, you can't, you know, there obviously are other factors involved that have been mitigating the carnage or the destruction that these trade deficits are going to cause, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. You know,
well, I think he also makes the argument that if we outsource our manufacturing and we put the profit margin on and we make a large profit, like a Dell, for example, that basically we're operating smart in the short term by outsourcing to cheap manufacturing, we're making large profits. But in the long term, ultimately, as what you're saying is as economies are going to grow, then, you know, if they're wise, they're going to buy the Lenovos of the world, or Lenovo's going to buy the IBMs of the world, and they're going to begin to take over these markets.
Well, look, if we were outsourcing our manufacturing, but still running a trade surplus, or if we still had a current account surplus to offset it, no problem. No problem. But you can't outsource the manufacturing and then run a deficit, because you can't expect the rest of the world to sell you products and not pay for them. We have to have a way to pay the workers in Asia for all these products that they're producing for us. We just can't keep running deficits and pretending that we have a viable economy. If we had some way to do it, fine, you know, but we don't. That's why it doesn't work. It's all nonsense. And, you know, these types of the people that are trying to advance these arguments, that just because, you know, we've done it for so long without a crisis, you know, it doesn't mean that, obviously the underlying problems have been getting worse. I mean, somebody can make the argument. I can be running up consumer debt. You can look at a family that's been living on credit card debt for 10 years, and now they have hundreds of thousands of dollars on their Visas and MasterCards, and you can say, well, look, doesn't matter how much credit card debt you run up, you can do it forever, because look, they're fine. They've been managing, they stay out of bankruptcy, they always manage to get another credit card in the mail, they always manage to take out another loan. Look, you can do it forever. Somebody who said you can't borrow, you know, I mean, obviously, it's possible to stay ahead of the creditors, you know, for a while, but you cannot do it indefinitely. And, you know, we're going to have to pay the piper on this thing. And, you know, the longer it takes, the bigger the bill. And, you know, I'm not going to abandon my convictions or try to reassess it in favor of believing in, you know, the equivalent of witchcraft or, just because it hasn't happened. Anyway, thanks for the call. I got about 5-6 minutes left. And the last thing I want to talk about is this mortgage brokers convention that I was at in Washington. You know, I'm speaking at another one, the Western Regional, which is a bigger event. Which would include, I guess, the region I was in this time in Washington State, in Nevada. Hopefully, we have a little bit more time for the one in Nevada. We didn't have a lot of time. I was on a panel on this one in Washington, but I also had my own presentation, my own workshop. But you know, one of the interesting things about it, first of all, is that you know there was asked for a show of hands before the panel. how many people think there's a real estate bubble? And there, you know, must be several hundred mortgage lenders in attendance, and not a single hand went up. Not a single hand. Nobody thought there was a bubble. Very interesting. And you know what these people are in this industry are the lenders, the people that originate mortgages. These are the people that are part of the problem. I mean, unknowingly, but they're helping to originate these mortgages. And of course, there are a lot of exhibitors, right, at this conference. I was an exhibitor, but I was like the oddball, you know, I was a brokerage firm. And I didn't have, you know, I got a complimentary booth pick for speaking. But most of the paid exhibitors were the middlemen in the whole securitization process. So what happens is I am a mortgage broker and I originate a mortgage. As soon as I originate it, what I do is I sell it to one of these middlemen who buys them from me. Then these middlemen turn around and resell them to a Merrill Lynch or Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley, which then creates a securitized mortgage pool. They accumulate about $1 billion worth of these things face, and then they sell them to the Bank of Japan, the Bank of China, you know, pension funds, anyone dumb enough to buy them. But the interesting thing about these intermediaries is all their, what their advertisements are and all their flyers and all their, you know, pens and everything is they're trying to tell the mortgage lenders, you know, hey, here's, you know, here's the loans that we're willing to buy from you and here's the terms that we want. And basically what they're all doing is telling people how crappy a loan they're willing to buy. And they'll have things like, you know, we will finance 100% stated income up to $1 million, even if the borrower has a FICO score of 520 or lower, even if the borrower has is behind on their mortgage payment, or even if the borrower has credit card debt, or if he has a bankruptcy in the last year. I mean, they'll go over all these things, and then sometimes if the guy is really, really bad, then they'll say, okay, we need 10% down, or we need, but they give you all the criteria, and it's amazing at the low credit quality, how big of a deadbeat you can be and still get 100% financing on a no-doc loan. It's just absolutely amazing. And, of course, I'm telling people that this whole industry is going to go up in smoke. It's not going to exist. Because this subprime mortgage lending market only exists because Wall Street is able to create demand for these products by repackaging and selling them to people who are totally oblivious to the risks. Oblivious. Have no clue how flimsy the collateral is and how much money is being borrowed by speculators to overpay for condominiums. Once, you know, over the next year and a half, you're going to start to see a lot of losses. People who have bought this debt, these subprime mortgages, are going to lose money because the people who they lent the money to are not going to be able to pay it back. They're not going to be able to make the interest payments when their mortgage is reset. And if the banks go to foreclose because they can't collect their payments and they try to sell these properties, they're going to get a fraction. They're going to get pennies on the dollar for what these mortgages are. But the minute the losses start, then the interest rates in the subprime market go through the roof. There's no more secondary market. When you don't have the buyers, the originators are out of business. When the originators are out of business, there goes the entire housing market, because without access to cheap, no-questions-asked credit, nobody can afford these houses with today's prices based on what they actually earn and with a fully amortized product. And anyway, I'm running out of time. I thank everybody for listening. Again, the number to call, the main office, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Don't forget, go to the website, download the new report on energy trusts. Also, you know, San Francisco Money Show is coming up. I'll be up in San Francisco next month. Check that out on the website. If you haven't been to one of the money shows, check me out in San Francisco. Anyway, I will be talking about the money show again next week. We're getting closer to the date. Anyway, thank everybody for listening. Again, this is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital. We're here at www.europac.net every week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thanks for listening. So long, everybody.